Agenda item number eight. Ms. Woodward.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The project before you is that of Verizon, who is requesting after-the-fact authorization to obtain a fiber optic cable installed across the southern branch of the Elizabeth River adjacent to the Gilmerton Bridge in Chesapeake. The project requires a wetlands and a subaqueous permit. Just to give you an idea of the project location, on the base map to the left, you can see the project site is indicated by the red marker. And on the right, this is actually a photograph that's several years old. This is the old Gilmerton Bridge. VDOT recently replaced the Gilmerton Bridge as part of roadway improvements to South Military Highway. And the approximate location of the cable crossing is indicated by the red line. This is a more recent aerial image that just shows the new bridge under construction. This is from 2013. On Thursday, July 18th of 2013, the fiber optic data cable crossing located in this area was cut, likely as a result of ongoing construction activities associated with the bridge replacement. This resulted in the disruption of vital data transmission services to local businesses and residents. On behalf of Verizon, Mr. Jay Crofton with Crofton Diving Corporation did notify staff of the situation by phone call on July 18th and then provided a subsequent email the following day stating the urgency of the work and acknowledgement of the need to apply for an after the fact authorization. Crofton mobilized the necessary equipment to conduct the repairs, and they rerouted a new cable across the bottom of the river on July 19th of 2013. During some subsequent inspections within the days after the installation of the cable, they discovered that the cable had likely had been disturbed either as a result of the construction activities or some of the vessel traffic in the area. And so Crofton crews remobilized and hand-jetted it into the river bottom several feet beneath the sediment using divers. So Verizon is requesting authorization to retain the fiber optic cable, which extends across 1,200 linear feet of the southern branch of the Elizabeth River. This is one of the plan view drawings that we received. Again, this is the Gilmerton Bridge. And the location of the cable is indicated by the green line. This is the current location of the cable. And the reason it is in this alignment, the reason for the alignment was to ensure that it was outside of the construction area associated with the bridge replacement. We did receive a revised drawing last week, and I'll explain this in a little more detail here shortly, but the eastern segment of the cable laying across the bottom will actually be relocated slightly further to the south and to the original, to the alignment of the original cable, which has been abandoned in place. And I'm not sure if it actually shows up here on the screen, but I do have in light green here the current location. So. This is the profile view drawing, and there are three segments, the western segment, the eastern segment, which the cable will be buried 3 feet beneath grade. There is a federal navigation channel that's maintained by the Army Corps of Engineers in this area, and in order to comply with the Nationwide 12 permit that was issued by the Army Corps of Engineers, Crofton Diving Corporation will actually be jetting the cable further into the sediment. The requirement is that no portion of the cable shall exceed an elevation of 52 feet mean lower low water. Right now it's buried, I believe believe it's buried about 3 to 4 feet beneath the sediment, so they're going to actually have to bury it even deeper to satisfy the Corps requirements. There are some temporary vegetated wetland impacts associated with this project. You'll see in my site photos that the cable is currently laying across the wetlands, but they will be impacting 22.5 linear feet of vegetated wetlands in order to embed it 3 feet below grade. You can see here, will be buried 3 feet below grade within a trench that's approximately 6 inches wide. And this will all be done manually. Verizon has agreed to resprig the area in order to expedite restoration of the area. These are a couple of site photos that I took. This is these site photos are along the western side of the river. This is the cable you can see laying across the wetlands. And the cable will actually terminate at a pedestal on the adjacent uplands, which essentially serves as a splicing station. Here's the cable. This is another shot of the wetlands. The cable right now, again, is laying or has been embedded a couple of feet beneath the river bottom, and the cable line is marked by these buoys. Once it's in its final location, the buoys will be removed. And the turbidity curtain you see in this photo was just a result of the construction activities and was associated with the bridge replacement project. We held a public hearing for this project on October 21st here in our main offices. Mr. Crofton attended the meeting in addition to staff. Mr. Tom Wheeler, who is the operations manager for Southern States Cooperative Incorporated, which is the adjacent property owner on the eastern side of the river, did attend. He was primarily there for informational purposes. However, he did want to ensure that if Southern States ever pursued permit to dredge in this particular area, there would be no conflict. And that was as a result of our discussions at the public hearing. Mr. Crofton agreed that they could relocate the line further to the south, and Mr. Wheeler had no concerns with that. The cable is necessary to provide full service along a strategic communication corridor in Chesapeake. Due to the urgency of the matter, Verizon was unable to wait for the permit to be issued prior to installation of the new cable. However, contact with staff was initiated prior to the work being completed. Additionally, Verizon has not completed the portion of the work within vegetated wetlands, and Verizon proposes to restore the impact area by sprigging it with native wetland vegetation. Accordingly, staff recommends after-the-fact approval of the project as proposed. In lieu of further enforcement action by the Commission, staff recommends after-the-fact approval of the cable crossing contingent upon Verizon's agreement to pay a triple permit fee of $300 and triple royalties in the amount of $10,800 for the crossing of 1,200 linear feet of state-owned submerged land at a rate of $3 per linear foot, pursuant to Section 28.2-1206 of the Code of Virginia, and a $1,000 civil charge based on a minor degree of deviation and a minimal degree of impact, as identified in the Commission's guidance for civil charge assessments. Given the temporary wetland impacts associated with the proposal, staff further recommends the following permit conditions. Erosion and sediment control measures shall be in conformance with the 1992 third edition of the Virginia Erosion and Sediment Control Handbook and shall be employed throughout construction. Permittee agrees to restore a minimum of 22.5 linear feet of vegetated wetlands on site following the installation of the fiber optic cable. Existing biological benchmarks will be used to reestablish the appropriate grade to support the planting of both Spartina alterniflora and Spartina patens on 12-inch centers. Any additional vegetated wetland areas directly impacted within the limits of disturbance will also be restored. Permittee agrees to coordinate all restoration activities with VMRC staff, and a final site inspection will be conducted subsequent to the restoration of the site. Permittee agrees to adhere to a time of year restriction from February 15th to June 30th to protect anadromous fish resources. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and Mr. Crofton is also here on behalf of Verizon.
Mr. Cedra,
did they find out who damaged the line that was there?
I do not believe so, no.
What is the staff's analysis? I mean, if Verizon didn't damage the existing, but they did an emergency repair, right?
Correct.
So what is the staff's reasoning to impose such a harsh fine on Verizon?
Well, whenever we receive an after-the-fact application and bring it to the commission for approval, based on the guidance for civil charge assessments, we, in most cases, recommend a civil charge because we've had to issue an after-the-fact permit. In this particular case, we felt as though the $1,000 civil charge based on a minor degree of deviation and a minimal degree of impact was appropriate given the circumstances.
Even though this was an emergency situation that they had nothing to do with?
Yes.
Okay.
Other questions from the commission? Thank you, Ms. Wood. Is the applicant present or represented?
Yes, sir.
Good morning. You hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth that will be God.
I do.
Please state your name for the record.
Wally Crofton, Crofton Diving Corporation.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Questions from the commission? Anything you wish to point out?
I would certainly like to address the situation as it was. This has happened in past situations, such as in, I think it was last year, when Dominion Power had the same type of situation with a fallen aerial line that we had to go underground with, and it was a safety hazard. It was with no fault of Dominion Power that had an existing permit. The same situation is here. There's a permit in place, and the cable was marked by way of Miss Utility. We went out and marked the cable months in advance of this, but somebody didn't get the message, and we don't know who hit it, but at that time, they have to get service back immediately. What we did, of course, I called Mr. Watkinson immediately to let him know what had happened. He informed me of the repercussions that might be in store, but we had to move forward to get to restore service. We went back out there and laid the cable on the bottom, hoping we wouldn't have to do anything until a permit was authorized. However, we went back the next day to get positioning of that cable to make sure we were right. Everybody knew exactly where it was. Keeping the cable well out of the construction zone after talking to the contractor, and we found that the cable had moved. Maybe it was a very lightweight cable. Fiber optic is very small, very lightweight, and the current probably moved the cable. And we didn't want that to happen anymore to get over into the construction zone. So we put a minimal amount of coverage over the cable, informing BMRC once again what our actions were. After we finished that, we've done nothing. We were waiting for this opportunity. So we did all the right things, making sure everyone was aware of what was going on. So we will do whatever the commission wants, obviously. But we would request that maybe something could be done regarding the penalties.
Questions from the commission? Just for out of curiosity, you'd mentioned Ms. Cable.
I'm sorry?
You'd mentioned Ms. Cable, the call-in line. Did I hear that right?
Miss Utility.
Miss Utility.
We went back.
My bad. Oof. Underwater, they're actually marked.
Oh, yes,
Miss
sir.
Utility. I didn't realize.
Electronically, we marked the cables.
You learn something new every day. Any questions, Mr. Crofton? Thank you, sir. Does anyone else in the audience wish to testify in favor of this project as proposed? Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to testify against this project? Seeing none, the matter is before the commission. Discussion asked. Mr. Zetran.
You know, when someone is forced to do a repair or something as a result of some act by some other person, I think it sends a wrong message if we are to impose what we call standard fines against that individual. Here, as I understand the facts, Verizon had nothing to do with breaking that cable, and yet they were obligated to repair it as quickly as possible. It's sort of like an airplane dropping out of the sky onto your house, and you happen to have one of these houses right on the bay or the river, and it blows all the debris from your house into the river, and then the agency comes by there and says, oh, man, hey, you're polluting the water here, so you got to pay all these big fines. And it had nothing to do with the airplane dropping out of the sky. I think that's the same deal here. And I'm all for if they have a situation where they were going to do this for profit, they went ahead and didn't get any permits, didn't tell anybody. But we used a reasonable man standard in the law. And what that is the minute they don't know who broke it, they know that somebody broke it, and it's broke, and it's underwater yet. And so they call VMRC immediately. And they say, hey, look, this is the deal here. You know, somebody broke this thing. We got to get it repaired. You know, no telling what kind of electricity is going in that water or whatever. And then they didn't do the whole job. They did the minimal job to establish, reestablish the line, and then left it so that they could come in here, get a permit, and then do the rest pursuant to our staff. So I think they've done everything a reasonable person would have done, and when it's appropriate time, I'll move that we do not assess them any penalties at all and approve their permit.
Further discussion? Mr. Ballard.
I have a question for staff on the royalties versus the fine. It seems like the royalties or the triple royalties, is that a penalty, in fact, imposing triple royalties versus just the standard royalty?
I guess in a sense it is. It's not associated with the civil charge matrix. That stands alone as a part of the violation or doing work before the permit was issued. The code does provide for triple permit fees and triple royalties when projects are done before the permits are issued. And so that's in response to the code stipulating those triple charges and triple permit fees.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes, Susie.
Typically, the staff recommends that when a person goes ahead and does a project without any contact with VMRC, and then you guys find out about it. And then they try to get the permit, and that's where this comes from. Is that right?
Well, I think it's hard to say where the law originated and why that was there. That's been there in that context even before the civil charge matrix was put in place and the provisions for civil charges were established. So you're right. It does contemplate, I think, to some extent possibly that people are doing things knowing they violated the law. In this case, we didn't necessarily have that. But one thing I do want to point out is whenever we get in and after the fact situation for a permit, there's additional staff time, additional work, additional effort that goes into the review and evaluations of projects like this, and they end up in front of the commission. So it does take additional time and effort, and I would suggest that maybe the code recognizes that when you deal with an after the fact situation as well.
Mr. Seth.
And I don't know fiber optic, but I would assume something as significant as that, if it's severed, could almost have a public safety component to it too. Do we have anything in the code that if it's a public safety issue?
No, I don't think there is. I think all these things can be taken into consideration.
Right.
And I do think it's sort of up to the commission to weigh these issues. We've tried to lay out for you what is in the matrix and what's in the law and what it provides. And that's what we have before you. But certainly the circumstances and issues can be considered. What we did not go into is what were Verizon's alternatives. We don't know. We didn't go down that path to find that out. Could you have rerouted this cable somewhere else? Is there a redundant circuit that they were utilizing when it was cut to make up the difference? I don't know the answers to those questions or whether they tried to do something different than just reestablish this line. But in this case, yes, I agree. There probably could be emergency communication issues, and the need to maintain communications is important. for that reason, when we're called about projects like this, and oftentimes I get the call, or if my staff gets the call, I end up talking with these folks, is that we don't want to stop you from maintaining services that we think are vital. You go ahead with the project, and we'll let the permit issues catch up with it. And if we identify a problem down the road, we might have to change something or you know, reorient something if we miss an issue just off the cuff when it came into us. And that's where we end up with projects like this.
Yes, Amy.
What would the royalty have been if it had not been an after the fact?
A third of what is listed there. It's triple at the rate we've indicated in the staff evaluation. It's normally $3 per linear foot for a new line that goes across the river. So the distance across the river times $3 would be the standard royalty. In this case, because of the code provides for triple, we gave you the triple amount.
If my math is right, if it wasn't triple, it would be $3,600?
Yes, that's about right, that, in that range.
A math success on, for me.
We're estimating.
Other questions from the commission? Matters before the commission, then public hearing is closed. Mr. Zedra.
I move that we approve the after-the-fact permit and assess the standard royalty, whatever the figure is that you came up with was $3,000 or $3,000 change, and that would be the appropriate royalty for this project.
Second.
So, motion by Mr. Zedra and a second by Mr. Erskine here.
I guess I would just have a little discussion for clarification. And basically, with the standard royalty, and I would assume that would also include the standard permit fee.
Yes.
Okay, and what about the other staff recommendations of erosion control and replanting the sprigs and that kind of stuff?
I would concur that that would be a part of this motion.
That was just for clarification.
All right, so to make sure that we're all on the same page here, the motion would be accept staff recommendation, except for tripling the royalty. The royalty instead would be $3,600, and instead of tripling the permit fee of $300, it would be the standard $100 permit fee.
That would be the motion.
And not assessing a civil charge.
Correct, and no civil charge. So that's a motion by Mr. Zedra. Let me double check to make sure Mr. Erskine is seconding that. All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Crowley.